You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
How are you feeling after that, Matt?
I feel a lot better than Bob.
Extra Time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Get lost.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Welcome, everybody, to Extra Time, driven by Continental and MLSsoccer.com. You can watch us on YouTube, download it wherever you get your podcasts. I am David Goss. Andrew Wiebe away on vacation. We finally gave him a day off, and I am joined today by Charlie Davies, my favorite striker in ETR history.
Oh,
my
guy. Lord.
Charlie, it's a big day. We've got a big day. We're going national team heavy. We've got Greg Berhalter, the manager of the national team, coming in. We're going to talk Yanks abroad. We're going to talk Jordan Morris, all these things. This is your wheelhouse, Charlie. So I had to get you started there with a little juice just to get you going.
Yeah, I'm pumped. I'm excited. We get to talk about the future, the current state of the U.S. men's national team, and some little tidbits that we receive.
And potentially, Charlie breaks the glass and throws that number 9 jersey that he's got over the left shoulder on. I hope there's an axe next to it that says "break glass" in if necessary, and in parentheses read "if Josie pulls a hamstring, let me know." Shout out to Josie, working his way back. Got a goal on the weekend. We were not on the show on Monday. I was away for the holiday. Mm-hmm. You weren't doing the show because you have better things to do, and I appreciate that.
Yeah.
So we didn't get to break that all down. We will preview a little of the weekend coming up. More good MLS action, but we're going to breathe a little because we didn't have 13 midweek matches for like the first time in a really long time. So it gives us a chance to talk about all these things. We've got some really good debate over 22 under 22 coming up. We're going to put together our dream five-a-sides where you're going to really see the soccer philosophy in these two minds. You're going to see who cares about what. And spoilers, one person on this show is a striker and cares about one thing in soccer. And the other person loves the beautiful game and the flow and the way it can work and what it can do to us emotionally from the inside.
Okay.
Before we get to Greg, though, we want to touch on something that happened in the news last night out in San Diego. The San Diego Loyal facing off against the Phoenix Rising in USL Championship action. And we got a number of emails about this. The first one from James Chelminski, who says, "Can the CONCACAF GOAT get a shout for walking off the field with his team in a do-or-die game last night in the USL? We need to get rid of bigotry in the game and society. This requires not just words, but also action." And if you didn't see it, Landon Donovan, of course, the head coach of the San Diego Loyal, they had an issue last week in which an opponent on LA Galaxy 2 said a racist comment to a player on their team. Nothing was done in that game. Afterwards, after San Diego found out about what happened, the coaching staff hadn't been aware during the game. They forfeited their points in that game, and the player has now been let go by LA Galaxy 2 in a game now this week, last night, against Phoenix Rising. There was a homophobic statement said to a player on the San Diego Loyal. It happened going into halftime. Landon Donovan discussed with the referee about what could be done, as well as the opposing coach. And they said, "We won't play if this player is on the field." No one else wanted to do anything. So Landon Donovan and his team chose to step off the field. And as James mentioned, they were in a playoff race. They were 1 point behind a spot for the playoffs in their first year of existence. And they talked about actions over words, making statements, and they decided to stand with that. And I think all of us here at Extra Time stand with that team. We're proud of the things they've done. We wish we could see more of this. We need to see more of this because saying stamp out racism is a toothless comment. We need action, and we all need to do the things in our everyday lives. And I think, Charlie, obviously Landon, a guy you know well, leading this group, but it was all these players that seemed to stand together and say, we won't be a part of this. We don't want to acknowledge a game that exists even with this in it. And I think we all want soccer, especially in the U.S. What we need right now is for it to be a safe space for everyone. And it can't be a safe space for anyone if it's not for everyone. So I thought it was a strong moment yesterday. Interesting email here from a fan in Sweden, Martin, who said he wants to share this story this morning. So Thursday morning in Sweden, he was studying at his university campus in Uppsala, Sweden. And he overheard a conversation. Oh, you know Uppsala?
I do.
There you go. Is it a nice place?
Jag pratar svenska.
Wow.
Ah.
I did not see Charlie speaking Swedish in this one coming. Martin goes on to say, "I overheard a conversation a few tables away. For context, I really hear Swedes talk about anything in MLS or American soccer." He said they were talking about the San Diego Loyal players walking off the pitch in protest praising their coach for making the decision and saying that this should be the standard. So actions do matter.
Yes.
They affect the people around the world. Charlie, I know you've seen some ugly stuff on the soccer field in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And there, we always ask, what can you do? And I think this is a strong statement from the San Diego Loyals to be leaders, to say this is how you can handle this.
Well, then on top of that, there needs to be a league initiative, set rules that if a team does have a player that causes a team to walk off, mm-hmm. that there's you know, penalties, there's point deductions, there's fines, there's suspensions. That's the way you have change, when you have actual action. And I applaud Landon Donovan and his squad for literally taking that necessary step.
Yeah, it was a strong moment, a powerful moment. We'll continue to stay updated on that story and give you more next week as it develops and see what's happened for the San Diego Loyal. Talking about men's national team legend in Landon Donovan. Let's get into our Yanks Abroad conversation here, Charlie. And there's only one place to start. FC Barcelona, the team in the world. There are two teams in the world at a level. There's Real Madrid because they win, and there's Barca because everyone loves them. And they are the soul of soccer. And for the first time ever, an American national team player isn't just going to be on the team. He was the signing that had to be made. He was the crazy tweets, announced death deep in the Twitter world, in South America, in Asia, in Africa. Barca fans were saying, get this done for a U.S. national team player. Sergiño Dest signs a 5-year deal. He has a release clause, Charlie. And obviously these things are fake because they don't ever want people to trigger them. But I've never seen an American with one. A $494 million.
That pumps me up. And for anybody listening or watching, Conrad De La Fuente worked his way up
mm-hmm.
in the Barcelona system, which is impressive in its own right. And now to be breaking through that first team, getting matches, being considered for, you know, playing time, wonderful. But to have a player, like you said, who is bought for a large number as a fullback, and to be given a 5-year deal, the number 2 shirt, replacing Nelson Semedo, that is something that we have not seen. This is Barcelona playing alongside Lionel Messi. The expectations, the quality training he's going to be a part of, and the matches, and just that being in that environment. And I'm sure, you know, when you come onto the field, there's a lot of instructions. There's a lot of adjustments you have to make, but wonderful situation for U.S. men's national team fans to have this type of player who's going to be in that environment, a part of the setup. And then it goes back to Ernie Stewart and Greg Berhalter, making sure that he was a part of the system, that he was going to choose the United States
men's
national team. And that's why I'm really high on the future.
And when you look at it, these situations aren't supposed to be easy. It's not easy to get into Barcelona. But as a player, his style, a player who wants to be in possession, who wants to be on the ball coming through Ajax, fits what Barca does.
Mm-hmm.
They've got a Dutch manager who wanted him on his national team.
Yes.
And Ronald Koeman, who wants him to be there. And I think he fits into a group with Ter Stegen behind him, Pique, Frankie de Jong, who he's played with, coming up in front of him. A group that he can be a part of, I think. And there's a clear path to say, we want you here. This is what we want you to do. And this is how you get in there. And we've never had that before. Even Pulisic, it wasn't straightforward. How's he going to get playing time? And he came in and played awesome. And it was great. But it wasn't set in stone that this was his spot. And I think it is with Dest.
And for Sergiño Dest, I think when he came into the situation between Bayern Munich, Barcelona, as a player, you want to know, where's my best opportunity to play? Of course, you're looking at two wonderful clubs. Bayern Munich just won the Champions League, and Barca has Messi. It's Barcelona. It's a great place to be. It's a wonderful city. But I think Ronald Koeman talking to him and saying, this is the plan for you. You're going to come in and play. You're going to get that opportunity. I think for a player, That's the decision right there. When mm-hmm. having that relationship with a coach who tried to get you to play for the international team and choose Holland. So I think for him coming in, the expectations are you got to get up and down that right flank. We're in possession. You have to sometimes start the attack, get down the line, play balls to feet, be comfortable in, you know, under pressure and tight situations. And I think that's going to allow him come back to the U.S. Men's National Team and fit right in, because that's what Greg wants his outside backs to do, which will create other space for some of the attackers that he'll have in front of him. So I think this is going to be a fantastic move for him. And I think that he's really going to hit the ground running.
Well, we talk national team a lot on this show, but finally we get an opportunity to talk about it with the man who makes the decisions for our AT&T 5G call to the field, the head coach of the U.S. Men's National Team, Greg Berhalter. Greg, thanks so much for taking the time.
You bet. Good to see you guys.
I know you've done a lot of interviews this week. I know this is the one you've been looking forward to the most. So we're glad to bring you on and have you a part of this. The reason, of course, that you've been so active is the Gold Cup draw occurring. And while it will come in a little bit of time, we finally have some national team to look forward to, some games. We have an idea of what it'll look like. Canada and Martinique so far in the draw. A question, what the fourth team will be in the group. But you look at this draw, what do you think about these matchups? And of course, what do you think about what's been going on lately under you versus Canada, playing them now, what will be a third time in a short span?
So I think, you know, you always want to be tested in the group phase, right? That's going to prepare you for the knockout round. And, you know, to have Canada, Martinique, and potentially a team like Haiti in the group phase, I think it will be a strong group. We know Canada, we know their group of players. We know it's a very competitive group, a very young and talented group. So we think that's going to present a good challenge for us. And then Martinique is, you know, they've been in the Gold Cup the last three times, right? So that's quite an achievement for a smaller nation. And then Haiti has a ton of pace, a ton of counterattacking ability, and is a fun team. So for us, we're really looking forward to it. I think it's a challenging group.
One of the players that might be a part of the Canada group, rumors coming out over the last day or two, but Ayo Akinyola is leaning towards Canada. Have you spoken to him recently? Do you have any updates on his situation?
No, I've spoken to Ayo a number of times. And again, you know, for us, it's about creating an environment that players want to be in, right? And hopefully we show them that. Hopefully we get the opportunity to show them that. He's been in our youth programs. You know, he was a big part of the under 20 program and the under 17. So he's a guy that we consider part of our program. You know, if he were to change, it'd be a disappointment because he has been, you know, such a large part of our youth programs. But you know, we want the opportunity to prove that we have a great environment for him to continue to develop in, and hopefully we'll get that.
Greg, I want to take it back to the 2018 World Cup. We failed to qualify. The country's like flipping everything upside down, every table, every chair. We're not developing players anymore. We're a lost. We've lost a generation. Flip it now. Here we are. Weston McKennie, Juve, playing, starting. Christian Pulisic, scoring, starting, Chelsea. Sergiño Dest, signing for Barcelona. Conrad De La Fuente, broke into the first team at Barcelona. Chris Richards, broke into the first team at Bayern Munich. Gio Reyna, starter, broke into the first team at Dortmund. Tyler Adams, starter, broke in at RB Leipzig, Champions League semifinalist. Timothy Weah was at PSG, Lille. First team. Ethan Horvath, starting. First team. Where did this come from? How did this happen? How now, for the people who said we're not developing players and we have potentially nine players in the Champions League this year, how did that come to be? What are your thoughts on the United States developing players?
Well, you know, I think the first thing is just the understanding that development takes time, right? I mean, everyone wants, you know, it now, but that's the word development. It's a period of improvement over time. And, you know, this has all come, I think, from the beginnings with the Development Academy. You know, you think about 10 years ago, you know, the decision was made, well, you know, with U.S. Soccer and MLS together to say, okay, we're going to put this platform together that's going to have the best kids playing against the best kids. And we're going to do this over time. And, you know, we're going to institute standards for academies and for what they need to look like using best practices. And, you know, we're going to keep doing this year over year. And we're going to get to a point where we're going to start developing players. And I think we're at that point. We've been at that point for the last 4 years, 5 years. And now you see, you know, Tyler Adams, like I'll start with him because when I look at his progress, he was 16 playing with Red Bull, right? Red Bull 2. Red Bull one, and like that's a great example of a guy going through the pathway that was created for him and then now is successful.
When you look at, let's talk individually, Let's start with Weston McKennie. What he's done at Juve the first 2 weeks, he showed at Schalke, I think he could play at the high professional level, but the games were a bit chaotic. What he was asked to do was different. It felt like every week. The first 2 weeks at Juve, do you see the Weston McKennie that you've always imagined stepping into your national team?
Yeah, not yet. You know, I think what we're seeing, what I saw in the first, so as I'm watching the games, there's a couple things that I'm seeing. The first thing is that he's clearly going to be used, or as of now, it looks like he's being used in a double pivot, and he's the destroyer there, you know. Mm-hmm. But they have so much possession that he's also able to use, get the ball and transmit the ball circulation, trying to break lines with the ball. I still see him, guys, as a player that can arrive in the penalty box. Mm-hmm. He's got a great knack to score goals, and it doesn't look like they're using him that much yet. He made a couple runs last game, but I think that's still a strength of his that they're going to start discovering as they work with him more.
And Gio Reyna, same thing, broke in to the Dortmund first team, playing as a number 10. Do you see the same position for the U.S. men's national team, him making that same switch, or is he can you play a number of different positions?
Yeah, so I think the 10 is a loose word when you're talking about what he's doing, right? They play a 5-3-2. He's one of the three in midfield, and you know, all of them kind of move around, and it's not a traditional number 10 like we're talking about, right? You know, sometimes it looks like a 5-2-1-2, but it's not like, you know, he's an engancha like you'd think of Argentinian playmaker, right? So it is a three in midfield. In defense, he drops back into that line of three, you know. So mm-hmm. I think for us, that's positive, right? You can think about in a 4-3-3, can he be one of those three central midfielders? I think is interesting. Can he be a winger if we play, you know, a different system? Can he be a withdrawn striker? You know, what I'm seeing from Gio is I want to get him close to the penalty box, close to goal, because I think he's got talent in front of the penalty box.
One of the setups we could see is one with fullbacks advancing up the field and giving him space to operate. And the expectation now is Sergiño Dest will be one of those starting fullbacks. For you as an American who loves soccer, but then as the national team coach, to see an American go to Barcelona, to be the Barcelona transfer of the offseason, what is the emotions? What is it like to watch him walk out of that airport and see the reporters yelling at him like he's Dani Alves?
You know, it's crazy. You know, I'm really proud of the kid, of Sergiño. Such a good guy, good player. You know, I had conversations with him leading up to this. And, you know, when you're talking about it, it's almost surreal that you're comparing two clubs like Bayern Munich and Barcelona, and you're having to decide between these two. It's a crazy discussion to have. And then, you know, it's really hard, you know, for any of us who love soccer and have been around soccer so long to say no to a club like Barcelona. It really is. Like, if that is an opportunity that you have in front of you, how do you say no, Charlie? How do you do it?
As long as Messi's there, I'm not saying no. I'm not saying no.
It's hard, I think.
You're right. And plus, Ronald Koeman, who probably is a little bit bitter at you because you were able to take Dest off his hands. So he's like, I can get him for club and country, but I think he has to settle just for club. When you look at the player pool that you have, and of course, I love to talk about the strikers in that position. It seems like there isn't one that has secured that spot. And maybe there'll never be one that you're going to say he's going to do it. You know, they have to be performing consistently, scoring goals, being in form and healthy, of course. But if you look at the player pool at the striker position, what does that battle look like? I know you have a number of players in that role. Where are you leaning towards? You know, is it potential? Is it experience? Is it players who are just in form? For you, how do you kind of look at that position and analyze it?
I think it depends what competition we're talking about, right? So we have a number of different competitions over this next year. With varying levels how do I say this the right way? I think when you talk about World Cup qualifying, that's do or die, right? And that's where you absolutely have to pick your best players. When you talk about Nations League, it's a tournament we want to win. When you talk about Gold Cup, it's a tournament that we want to win and compete in. But it's unrealistic to think we're going to be able to use the same players for all those things. So you know, what I would say is just looking at the striker position in general. I think, you know, you have Jozy Altidore, who is probably still the most talented that we have in that position, but he's got fitness issues, right? I mean, let's call it what it is, right? He's not fit to play 90 minutes. He's not fit to play at the level we need him to, but he's still an amazingly talented player. So our goal there is to keep working with him, working with the club to get him up to where he needs to be, and hopefully he can get there. But we're not sure with that. We're not sure.
Right.
Jossie's a guy who fitness levels are off the charts, and he's scoring goals. And you know exactly what he's going to give you in every single game, right? He doesn't have the talent per se as Jozy, but he's you know, in a certain type of system, he's a really effective goal scorer and a hard worker. So I think he's doing a great job with Columbus this year. You know, you have Jesus Ferrer, who's not doing great with his club. When he came in with us, we really liked what he was doing. You know, Josh Sargent, obviously in Bremen now. You know, he started out playing on the wing. Hopefully we can get him moving up closer to goal. But last game, he had a number of chances. He had an assist on a goal. He could have scored a bunch. I think when he gets into form, he starts scoring, he's going to be really interesting. And he's a guy we're really counting on. And then you have Sebastian Soto, you know, in Holland, who scored a couple goals lately. So, I mean, I think that's the, did I leave anyone out? I'm just trying to think. That's the, you know, I would say that's.
Yeah, I don't think so. Like that's, I think that's the part that hurts.
There's some guys on the outside. Yeah, no, I understand what you're saying. There's some guys a little bit on the outside, like Mason Toy, you know, who's, I don't think ready yet. And I know you saw him playing some games and score some good goals, but I'm not sure he's there yet.
Yeah.
And I agree with you. I mean, it's a concern. I think what you'd really love to see is a guy like, you know what you're going to get from Jozy and Jossie, right? You'd love to see a guy like Jesus, Josh, and Sebastian Soto just take off and start scoring, you know. And Ayo Akinola is another guy, you know, who I did leave off, who has potential. You know, he's also a guy that to me has a lot of attributes that we look for in a striker in our system.
Let me ask you that question though, because in Columbus, your strikers look very similar. And of course, Kai could do different things than Ola and Giassi, but it was a lot of the same responsibility and role. You just named seven players who all do completely different things, from almost a false nine, Jesus Ferrer, to Josh, to Jozy, to Giassi. Do you change how you're thinking about that position with this group, because it's not a club where you can go out and get the exact guy you need?
Well, let me ask you something. I think Josie's an amazing false nine. Jozy's a soccer player. Jozy's a soccer player. Josh Sargent. Josh Sargent, same thing, right? He's another guy who easily drops in. I mean, he's playing winger right now. Jesus, same thing. So those guys are to me, very similar. Mm-hmm. Then you have Jossie, who is working on dropping in, but also is very good at stretching. So I think like there is going to be a combination. When our striker drops, our wingers run behind. When our wingers strikers high, our wingers come inside. And that's got to be something that we keep focused on. So we need the skill set for them to kind of do both. But where they're really going to make their mark, guys, is in the penalty box. That's really where they're going to do their thing, right? That's where strikers score the goals.
Greg, one player that we're going to talk about later on the show is Jordan Morris and his progress. Yeah. You know, I love to see a comeback story, a player who has struggled with some injuries, you know, I think he had to build up his confidence, but gets going. And now he looks like he's a player who can impact the game in different ways. I think he was a little bit predictable in the past, even though he was still effective. But now I think he understands a little bit more how to check back, how to engage in combination play, his good first touch, and his vision. I think he's excelled in being aware of other players in the field. If he's able to go to Europe, if that's an option, would you tell him, go over there, test yourself, be put in a position where a coach believes in you and you're going to be tested week in, week out, day in, day out?
Charlie, you know what I like to do in these conversations is listen more and just hear from him. What are his goals? You know, what does he want to achieve in his career? Because I think that's the most important thing, to give advice. You know, if Jordan tells me, listen, he wants to play at the absolute highest level and that's a burning desire of his, and he wants to play in the Champions League, and then it becomes clear what the pathway is. Mm-hmm. But if he says, no, you know, listen, I want to be the best player in Seattle Sounder history, one of the best players in MLS history, then you know. I mean, you know how to advise the guy. So for me, with all these guys, it's not an agenda of what I want. It's about listening to what they want. Because in the end, that's when they're going to be the most successful.
Can I ask you real quick, in what he does well and could do for the national team, it feels like a lot of crossover with what Christian's done well at Chelsea. How would Jordan fit into your group? And do you have a depth chart idea of where he is right now?
Yeah, so I think from where they line up, I completely agree with you. But they're, you know, the 1v1 ability of Christian is unbelievable. It's a different level. It's, you know, it's not, you know, Jordan to me is a stretcher. He's a guy that is going to give you verticality in your game, mm-hmm. and you need that, right? You know, if you have all Christians, then they get the ball to feet a lot, and then, you know, then the field becomes compact, right? Mm-hmm. You need stretchers as well. And, you know, Christian's been adding that to his game. I remember, you know, watching a couple times and giving him some feedback after games and seeing how he's now trying to get behind the line. I think when he does those two things, he's unstoppable. But Jordan, to me, is a guy that is going to give you, create space in your game. And so, you know, I think he's best lined up on the left, and I also think Christian's best lined up on the left. So that's going to be a difficult decision. And, you know, obviously they both can't play on the left, so you're going to have to figure something out.
I know we are pushing our time with you, so I got to ask you one last huge question. There's a rumor there might be a dual national team fight over a kid born in England, but now playing in Columbus, making his breakthrough. So do you have any reports on Sebastian Berhalter potentially leaving us? But we did really want to ask what it's like as a guy who played at a high level, had those nerves. Had those nerves. What's it like watching him walk out there as a pro for the first time, compete at that level, as a father and as a guy who played pro,
but also the progress that he's made?
Yeah, no, he's done a great job. You know, he's done a great job of just being patient with himself, working hard, and just focused on the process of getting better. I mean, I think that a lot of young kids want things too quickly and are rushing everything and think, you know, every day their mood is volatile because they are or they're not achieving their goals. And he just stayed patient and believed in the process of continual improvement, trying to get better every single day. So that's great. Watching him is a complete nightmare because all of a sudden I'm not a soccer coach anymore. I'm a dad. And it's like, oh my God, like you just want the best for him. You want him to do the best in every single play. And it's like, it's difficult, man. It's not, I mean, thank gosh that it's only him right now that's going to be playing in MLS. You know, my daughter's maybe playing in another league, but thank goodness that I have only one son right now.
So we've got the Gio Reyna, Berhalter. We've got Tyler Wolf coming through as well. So the next generation is ready to go, and we are excited about that. Charlie's got twins, so you'll have a center back pairing there because Charlie's only about defending.
Right. Yeah, all right.
There's your center forwards for the future coming on.
Now you're talking.
The Charlie Davisons. Greg Berhalter, thanks so much for taking the time to join us. We really appreciate it.
You bet, guys. Thanks for having me. Great talking to you guys.
Our AT&T 5G call to the field. What a great time with Greg Berhalter. Always awesome to talk soccer with the El Capitan of the whole thing. And I know he's dying to get some players under him, and we'll see that soon. Of course, the Gold Cup coming up in 2021, Nations League as well, moved around, World Cup qualifying, a ton of games, and of course, Olympics. So a lot going on in the U.S. soccer sphere. Charlie, I want to hit on a few things, though, he talked about, because it's the things we've been debating. And I think he gave a little more clarity, or at least gave us the pools of what we can talk about. Mm-hmm. The first is the striker position. It's important to you. It's important to the U.S. because it seems like probably the least clear conversation right now. Greg listed out his names. It seems like, okay, those are the ones that are in the conversation because mm-hmm. that's who he thought of first. And this is his life and he lives it every day. What did you take from what he said? What would you do at that center forward position?
Well, one, there's a real lack of depth. Mm-hmm. I think that's a concern for the U.S. Women's National Team because if there are some injuries, then the numbers even become smaller. And so it's a concern because you want players, a number of players out there in good situations. And, you know, not, you know, it's not typical where you have 10 strikers who are all in form scoring goals. Right. That doesn't happen. Strikers go in and out of rhythm, but as long as they're getting playing time and they're pushing minutes or they're pushing, you know, whether it's pushing for Champions League or pushing for Europa League or pushing for MLS Cups, you want players who are doing it. Right now, we don't have enough. There are not many. And Jordan Morris is a player who we didn't really talk about, who's playing on the wing at Seattle because you have Raul Ruiz Diaz, and what a great goal scorer he is. He's mm-hmm. just a pure goal scorer. So Jordan Morris has effectively changed his game a little bit, playing on the wing, which has made him a better player. I know ultimately he'd love to play in that number nine position, the highest up the field. So maybe that's an option in the future for the U.S. men's national team. If he goes to another club, if he does leave the Seattle Sounders and goes to Europe and plays as a striker, maybe that's another added option. But I think for us, U.S. men's national team fans and supporters, we just want to have clarity in that position, and we don't have it yet. And that's because Jozy Altidore hasn't been 100%. He hasn't been healthy. We heard Greg say, he's the best striker. He is the best striker we have when he's fully fit.
I like that Greg was like, it's not debatable, so there's no point.
Right. It's not debatable. But the question is, can he play 90 minutes every single match that the U.S. men's national team play? And you need to be able to depend whoever your starter is, you need to know they're going to play 90 minutes. When you start a match, you don't want to say, we got to pull him at 60 or 70 or 70 or 65. It should be guaranteed they can play 90 minutes, whoever's playing, and we make substitutions according to the game, not based on fitness. So hopefully he gets back to a level where you don't have to worry about 90 minutes from Jozy Altidore. So that position is set for me. That's exactly. But you also want those people who are going to push him and challenge him for minutes. So right now, you have limited options, and Josh Sargent is playing on the wing. You heard that doesn't help him. It doesn't help the U.S. men's national team. So it's great that he's getting minutes in Bundesliga, but you want him playing as a striker, being the guy who has to score goals, because when you're playing international World Cup qualifiers in Central America, where you're just relied on to score goals, sometimes you're playing on bumpy pitches, you're playing on pitches that don't have grass, you're playing in these really tough situations. Sometimes all it takes is one chance. That's all you're going to get in a match, just because of the way they're defending. It's rough. Referees, maybe you feel like, are against you in a way. You have to capitalize on that chance, and it comes down to goal scorers. And so for us right now, I think that's the biggest concern for me across the board for U.S. men's national team in positions. We don't have enough strikers.
Yeah. Now, Greg brought up Giassi early because Giassi is fit, does do the things he wants. He has coached him before. Mm-hmm. So you have to think, tomorrow, Giassi is the starter if Josie's not fully fit and Sargent is playing at the level he's playing. Mm-hmm. You have to assume from a base level that Giassi is the starter. And if you get into camp and Jozy looks fit and Josh plays well, then they take that spot. Mm-hmm. Is that fair to say?
Just on trust. Yes, because Giassi has Greg's trust. And I think that's really important when you're talking about a manager and a player, and knowing that you can depend on him, you know exactly what you're going to get. That's huge for a manager. He doesn't have to worry about what he wants from that position. But that also changes the way you play. Like he said, when the striker comes and drops in and creates that space in behind for those wingers who we have now, who can make those runs in behind, who can stretch teams, you need a player who can do that. And Jossie's working on it, but he's not Jozy Altidore. So there are just a number of things going that come into contention when you're dealing with a striker in that World Cup qualifiers and games that matter, do or die, like you said. So with that being said, we have a long way to go. It's a work in progress, and hopefully we get the ball rolling.
We're waiting for Josh Sargent to have his Gio Reyna, Tyler Adams moment in Europe where it's like, oh, wow, he's dominating right now. For a stretch, and then it's his spot. Tim Weah, I was interested, didn't get mentioned. I know he's just coming back from injury, but he's played at that spot for Lille. I think
more of a winger, in my opinion.
But if he played, but Greg talked about a false nine.
Yeah.
And if Weah is playing that spot, he's the backup to David right now at Lille at that spot. It's similar to the things that he's talking about Josh can do. Sebastian Soto and Ayo Akinola both got mentioned, so you're welcome. U.S. because if they get recruited to play here, it's all because of Extra Time Radio. And Greg Berhalter knows that. So we are doing our jobs to keep things strong at the forward position. You mentioned Jordan Morris. Charlie, I thought it was interesting what Greg had to say, saying, you know, I have to see what he wants in life to tell him where to go. We have a question in the mailbag from Danny, who says, big fan of the show, LAFC supporter, and he wants to know, Jordan Morris, just turning 25. He's turned down a move to Europe earlier in his career. It seems now he's staying healthy, playing better than ever. Is he a guy who needs to go to Europe like this other young crop of national team players? Are we ever going to see it? or is this another Landon Donovan situation?
Well, like Greg said, if he wants to be the best player he can possibly be, then he has to go to Europe. There's no doubt. And the reason why he has to go to Europe is because he's going to be pushed. The level of competition every day in training and consistently in matches from week to week, the coaching, the tactical and technical training. If he wants to reach his peak, then I believe he has to go. He's going to be 27 for this World Cup.
Mm-hmm.
He'll be 31 for the 2026, which is ideally his prime.
Right.
You got to go to Europe. And there are a number of situations, because I think it all comes down to being put in a position to succeed. Having a coach that believes in you, trusts in you, going to get the most out of you and push you without just giving you one or three, four opportunities and then chucking you to the side. And so
I would say he's definitely in a better situation, because MLS is at a spot now where he's a legitimate contributor, mm-hmm. and he will be signed to a team to be that, not to develop, which was what Correct. Was going to happen at Wolfsburg. But isn't Landon Donovan the greatest US player of all time? And isn't MLS a stronger league now? So can't Jordan get to that level staying in MLS similar to what Landon did?
No.
How come?
Well, I believe when you look at what Landon Donovan did in the 2002 World Cup at his age and what he was able to do internationally from a very young age, having played in Major League Soccer his whole career, the difference was he was doing it internationally and he was at a level that he didn't really need to push it. He didn't need to go any higher. I mean, he could have. Mm-hmm. If Landon had stayed in Europe and had been put in a position where he felt a little bit more comfortable, because that's what Landon needed in order, you know, to be mentally comfortable in order to succeed, which I think he saw later on in his career when he went to Everton on loan and he had that success. And he's like, this is what it feels like. but a little too late. Jordan Morris is as great as he's been this year with Seattle and as effective as he's been. And I think he's made a tremendous amount of improvements. He'll never be the best version of himself if he stays in Seattle. That's a fact. He needs to go to Europe. If this is what he wants, if he wants to be the best Jordan Morris he can possibly be and reach his potential, fulfill it, you got to go to Europe. And it's obviously going to a place that, okay, let's say Nice. You go to a club where Patrick Vieira is the manager.
Mm-hmm.
A guy who really understands the game, who can help you develop, can push you in the right places, and also provide, you know, good feedback and advice for the next move after that. Just there are a number of clubs. You can look at the Bundesliga. You can go down the managers who, if he was in that situation, man, he would really thrive. And, you know, it's all about the demand. Is there you look at Wolves, right? That's another club that I look at. English Premier League, they lose Jota to Liverpool, a really influential winger. Now, if Jordan Morris, if Wolves were interested in him, for me, it's a no-brainer.
Charlie Davis breaking news.
To go into that team with Nuno Espirito Santo as your coach.
Jorge Mendes, Jordan Morris.
And to push him into that circumstance where a coach has a great philosophy identity, it's a secure spot, not a place that you're always constantly looking over your shoulder because of relegation. And you're really put in a position to succeed with the style of play. I think that would be obviously a phenomenal place for him. That's just an example. But, you know, I think for Jordan Morris, I've always been high on him, especially in 2015 when he had those two friendlies in Holland and Germany. You really got to see his quality, his pace, his thinking of the game. And I think where he's developed in MLS is after the ACL tear, having so much time to watch the game from afar, his spatial recognition, his first touch, and just his influence in the game, checking back, combining. For me, Jordan Morris can be a truly special player if he leaves.
It's going to be interesting to see. He's got a shot at winning MLS Cup with Seattle, of course, this year again. And for a hometown guy,
Don't get mad at me. I'm just trying to.
Well, I thought it was well said by Greg to say, does he want to be the face of the Seattle Sounders? Because that's something that Landon did for the Galaxy, but I don't think ever existed before of like hometown and your club is big enough for it to feel like a thing. Mm-hmm. Rather than saying like, you know, Brad Davis is the face of the Houston Dynamo at a time when they're between stadiums and figuring things out. It's different for Jordan Morris to have his jersey in the rafters
yep.
at that stadium, mm-hmm. to be the face throughout the city, to be the essence of the game in that region. Like, that all potential exists. And that's why Clint Dempsey went there in the end, right? Because playing for one of those teams in MLS didn't really exist. Mm-hmm. And then Clint came back, played that qualifier there and saw a different experience. So it'll be interesting for Jordan, because I think it's outside of Landon that one time, I don't really think we've had a serious debate about what you can do. And he's already done it once. He chose Seattle that first time. We'll see what happens the second time. Last one I want to hit from what Greg said is Gio Reyna, because their comments came out that Reyna says he's a 10. He wants to play 10 for the national team. He started the first three or four games so far for Dortmund. Some have been bad, like Augsburg. Some have been better. What did you take from what Greg said? And what do you see when you watch Reyna play for Dortmund, and then what he can bring to the national team?
I think it's undecided right now where his best position is. And, you know, he's 17, like Greg has said, mm-hmm. he's still figuring out where he's going to be, you know, most influential. I've liked seeing him as a left winger who comes inside and is able to combine an inverted left winger in a 4-3-3. But again, if a player is really adamant that I can be a number 10, this is my position, then you got to wait and see how he develops when he's given that opportunity. And if it doesn't, maybe it does make sense to put him on the left wing where he's isolated 1v1, where we've seen Christian Pulisic really make a difference. Because initially, it was always Christian as a 10, 10, mm-hmm. 10, 10,
right.
kind of forcing it, where it's always been natural for him to be on the left side, coming inside, making those diagonal runs in behind the striker who drops in, like a Jozy Altidore, what he could do for the U.S. national team. But you want him in those isolated situations, 1v1, because the dribbling ability is phenomenal, where he's 1v1 and you don't have to worry about 2, 3, 4 players clogging the middle and taking away that space and have it end up changing his game and not have him not be as effective. So I'm really excited to see Gio Reyna continue to progress and get an understanding of what it means to be a 10 versus what it means to be maybe a winger who comes inside and can act like a 10 at times.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see, because when you look at the way Dortmund has played, his best moments are when he floats out left.
Yes.
And takes someone 1v1. And then, as you're saying, Pulisic can come inside. Mm-hmm. So is that the solution to it all? Is, well, these are their starting positions and it fits together because it works. But you look at Dortmund, it's Brandt, it's Royce, it's Hazard, whoever on the outside who cuts in, and then Reyna finds that space. It'll be the same. It could be the same mm-hmm. with Pulisic there, if that's what they choose to do. Pretty wild that any of these are even options
for
Berhalter. And that's one of the things that's most exciting. And I think you could feel with him a level of excitement that maybe it was harder a year ago for him.
Of just maybe it was harder. Oh,
he's coaching games.
Oh then. My God. What about 2018, early 2019, right? You're like, oh, who's going to come out of the woodwork?
Portugal in friendlies and starting CJ Sabang up top. Shout out
yes.
to CJ.
Yeah. Yes. Like that. Like me, along with every other former men's national team player, fan, supporter, we're like, where are we going? What is happening?
Yeah.
Then you fast forward now and you're like, oh my, can we get this team on the field? Can we get a friendly? Can we get some camps? Because I want to see how this is going to look. We're all interested to see positionally. Where is Conrad De La Fuente ready to play? That's a legit question for me. I want to see what he looks like in this fold. Chris Richards,
got to bring him up.
Chris Richards, like, getting minutes for Bayern, you're getting publicly called out with your how well you've been performing in training, that you deserve minutes. We haven't had that imposing center back who is guaranteed to be a starter that you can depend on. This kid is that guy. I believe he's...
Is he a starter now? You get 2 sub appearances for the first team. You're playing Bayern 2 minutes. But it's a position of weakness right now. Aaron Long has not been strong in MLS action. Walker Zimmerman's played well, but in a different level at a different group.
Yeah, I'm starting him.
Yeah.
If I'm in that position where I can choose who's going to start, I'm starting him. Because
he still has to earn it?
No, absolutely not. You're playing with Bayern, the Champions League winners. you definitely don't have to earn anything. You earn it with your performances, with your chances coming to the first team. So absolutely not. I think when you do have to earn your World Cup, stripes, so to speak. And that starts with international games, and it's a different level. So the earlier he starts that learning process, the better it is for the men's national team.
A lot to be excited about, a lot to see. A lot of these guys came out of MLS academies, came out of Major League Soccer. Yes. October means the 22 under 22 list is coming up. We are going to have a lot of time to talk about it. We will, of course, then go through it once we finally get it at the end of the month. And we are really excited about that. But we got the list of the players who can potentially be on it. Mm-hmm. And Charlie, we came up with the idea that we're going to put together our Dream Five aside out of the 22 under 22 list. We will put this out there for everyone. But what we did was we took all the players that are eligible. We put them in pots, numbered 1 through 5, 5 being the best, 1 being, you can use a different term, that's the opposite of best. I'm not going to say anything negative about anyone. Mainly players who haven't really played yet and have potential, but right. We don't know. We are going to build our dream teams. We have 15 points to use. So 1 through 5, which means you can pick one person from each pot, or you can not choose anyone from the 5 and do whatever you want.
Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So let's start out, Charlie. Do you have anyone in the 5-point pot, or do you want to start at 1? How do you want to do this? You don't even want to.
No, let's start. Let's just start with the 5s.
Okay. So what is your theory here? Are you putting together the 5 best players? Are you putting together a 5-a-side group?
See, this is when I can teach you a lesson or two here. Okay. So in professional 5-a-side matches and training, there is a clear understanding of who's going to win and who's not just based on who the 5 are. And the 5 players in order to win these 5-a-side games are 1, who are going to defend. You need players who are going to defend. Only the players who just sit up there and cherry pick and don't really have any influence whatsoever on the defense side of the ball, you're not going to win. The lazy players, out. You have no shot of winning the 5-a-side tournament if you have lazy players in your roster. So if there's 5 and you have 2 lazy guys, you're out. You know you're losing. You're out. Don't even think about it.
2020 has been a wild year. A lot has happened. But I think what broke me is for the second week in a row, Charlie Davies came into an open conversation and went defensive first. Last week, it was Jonathan Mensah as MLS MVP. This week, he's teaching me that I need to have defenders on my 5v5 side.
Just throwing that out there.
It's wow.
Yes.
Wow.
And the defenders who also can strike a ball and score goals, that's the added bonus here. So when I go with my first player who's a 5 rating on this list.
Okay.
And it is tough. I'm going to go with Mark McKenzie.
I saw that coming.
You did. I'm sure you did. So,
and it's fair. So when you look at the pot of 5, Mark McKenzie at center back, Sam Vines in this, and Bro Guillard we had in there, fullbacks, and then Louis Binks and James Sands as well, all, and Julian Araujo, which you would consider quote-unquote defenders in this group. Now, I think Louis Binks has been, alongside McKenzie, the best young defender in MLS this year. I think he's been the brightest spot for Montreal. It's too bad he's going to be sold. He started at left center back. He slid in as the central center back now because I think Thierry Henry trusts him even more. You respect him less than I do. So you were always going to go Mark McKenzie.
Yes, it's not even close for me. It's not even close. Although I do like Louis Binks' game. I do think he adds a lot to that the Montreal impact because they're in a tough spot right now. So Louis Binks is definitely one of the bright spots. I mean, Ramel Kyoto also has been one of those strikers who's, I think, benefited playing for Thierry Henry in that system. Although the red card he had against the Union was strange. But Mark McKenzie, he's a guy that he can score goals. He sees the games well. I've played 5-a-side, so I know what I'm going to get from him. So,
Okay. So I respect that. And I have a list of 4 players that from the 5 pot that I wanted. McKenzie was one of them. I'm not going to take him because I won't do that. I'm going to go with I want a group that sees the game in one mind, that wants to be on the ball, tight spaces, work with possession, tight game, whatever. So I'm going to start with my five. My number one, because it's not based on health now, is going to be Paxton Pomykal. Because that's a guy who will play both ways, work hard. In a five-a-side game, you sometimes have someone who puts you in a bad spot, often, and he's clean enough to get you out of those situations. So I'm going to start with Paxton Pomykal because I think I've got my defenders later on down the list that are going to give me that work.
Yeah, I like that.
So we start. Charlie's got McKenzie. I've got Paxton. Let's go to the four pot. Do you feel strong about your pick here?
How about this? I didn't choose anyone from the four.
Oh. So you are being creative with your numbers. This is GM Charlie Davies at work here. Man, I wasn't as creative as him. All right. Well, I'm going to say, so the four pot, you've got Jordy Mihailovic, you've got Daryl DK.
Just go down the Frankie Amaya, Christian Caceres, Diego Palacios, Andres Reyes, Georgie Bello, Ignacio Aliceta, Miguel Navarro, Luis Diaz, Ayo Akinola, Jordy Mihailovic, Daryl DK, Jesus Ferreira, and Ricardo Pepi.
Yeah. So I think you have a lot of players there who have a ton of experience, high minutes. You've got big signings in the guys from Chicago who are brought in for money, Luis Diaz, a DP as well. I'm going to go here, though, and just stick to FC Dallas because I trust them with my Paxton pick. I'm going to stick there. I thought I was going to go Jesus Ferreira, but I'm going to go Ricardo Pepi because I think Pepe's got the feet to play in tight space. He likes to play off guys who are talented, who know what they're doing, and he's a pure goal scorer. He's probably the best goal scorer on this entire list. And I think he'll go on to be that. And Greg Berhalter will come on ETR in a year and a half, 2 years, and be like, well, I can't push Ricardo Pepi out of that role. So Josie and Josh Sargent have to wait. So I'm basically just going to play with FC Dallas. Lucci will probably be my coach and move on from there. So Charlie, do you have two number threes coming?
So right now you have 9 points.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And you've only used five.
Yes. So I passed on the four.
And the three, leaving his powder.
The three pot.
Yeah. So I don't think we're not going to read the whole list because it's a massive list.
Yeah.
Some of these start to get longer and longer.
Yeah. So the three pot, so, I went Anthony Fontana.
You love. So you've got two Philly players.
I do. Oh, no coincidence there that the Philadelphia Union have an academy that develops some quality players. I don't know. You tell me.
No, I think once we get through these, I think my team's going to end up being pulled from the same three clubs. And that's a credit to them. Right. They deserve to be, their players deserve to be in this conversation for a reason. You think Fontana?
Yep. Scores goals. And I've seen him in small-sided. So he's creative. He has that imagination. He can try some things. The chip, he can scoop, he can chip, he can combine, he can shoot from distance. He's got great feet. Right foot, left foot, can dribble, and he can defend. I've seen him tackle. I've seen him, he can be physical. He can mix it up. So for small-sided, 5v5, count him in. Give me that. And he's a threes in the three pot? Guy should be in the five pot. Have you seen him play lately?
He scored two great goals, which is fantastic, but he's not giving you...
He scored three great goals.
What?
He scored three great goals.
But we're in the one pot. We're talking about Brian Rodriguez, who starts for Uruguay.
Yeah.
We're talking about Ezequiel Barco, not that he's been great, who was signed for whatever. We're talking about Brendan Aaronson, who is the core of the team, not a guy in Fontana yet. And he could get there. I don't know that he will, but he could get there. But Fontana's a super sub right now, and he's doing great things, but he's not in that pot. So that's your three. That's one of your threes. You've got two?
No, just one three.
Wait, so what do you have, 5-2s in here? What'd you do? Okay. So then I'll go with my number three here. And Charlie obviously buried the lead. I will say Julian Carranza and Matias Pellegrini, two high-priced players, are in this. Marcos Lopez as well. If we're talking five-a-side, I'm going to go and I'm going to listen to what Zlatan Ibrahimovic said, if you're playing small-sided, I want Efrain Alvarez on my team first because that kid is filthy.
Oh, sorry. I do have Efrain Alvarez.
No, Charlie, you're copying me now.
No, I do.
Anders, can we get a ruling? Is Charlie allowed to have the same players as me? Anders says yes. Okay.
I have Efron Alvarez.
So you said you only had one.
Yeah, I have 5-3-3-2-2.
Okay. So you have Efra as well.
Yes.
I assume for the same reasons. Filthy on the ball.
Yes.
Creative. Mm-hmm. Makes things happen that don't exist. Maybe not the hardest worker both ways, but I think I can get by in a five-a-side game.
Yeah. You need at least just one guy who can give you a little something different. And
yeah,
maybe not the best defensive player.
Okay. So now we're on to your list of twos.
Yeah. I went Robbie Robinson and Omer Fernandez.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
You left out Tajon Buchanan?
Yeah. Small side is not his thing.
Wow. I am shocked right now.
11v11, open up the field. Great.
Right.
But we're talking tight spaces, combination play, sharp movements. I'd love to have like a pure striker, like a IO in this group, because I think those are the guys you can just continue to give the ball to. They score goals.
Is Robbie not that guy?
I think he can be that guy. I don't think he's proven it yet, like an IO. But he can. I've seen him in college last year, calling all the games with Clemson. Both right foot, left foot, long distance, short distance, combining. He scored some special goals in college. And Omer Fernandez, I think he's way undervalued in by Red Bull in particular. But a player who can combine, he's good on the dribble. I like it. You know, he's got tidy touches. He's a player that I think has a high ceiling.
Where would you play him ideally in an 11v11? Where would Omer Fernandez play? Because that's been one of the Red Bull's problems.
Outside, whether he's playing in a 4-4-2 and he's the outside midfielder, or 4-3-3, an outside winger who comes inside.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think he has potential as a 10, but I don't know how much people play with that. So why waste it? Okay, I respect that. My number three, I was split. I was between number two. I was between George Campbell from Atlanta United, center back, homegrown signing, who I think is going to be in the conversation for national team at center back. He does the things, you know, can play both ways, is comfortable reacting to attacking players, clean in his possession, clean with the ball. And Brandon Cervagna, who
oddly got pushed into this one. I don't know what happened.
I think he earned the starting spot at the beginning of last year, was a deeper midfielder, moved kind of higher up the field for Dallas, clean possession player, works both ways, but has had trouble finding his space now, and especially with Thiago Santos and Acosta there as well. But I'm going to go with George Campbell because I think, as Charlie explained to me, as a pro, the thing I don't understand is you need defensive work. So I'm going to put George Campbell in there as my two. You don't have any ones on your list because you just wouldn't even deal with the pot. It's not good for some good teams.
Yeah, for no ones right now. You're trying to get the best team you can possibly have that's going to win. And so you need, for the most part, two-way players, that one gifted player up top. I think that'll be by committee between Efron Alvarez and Robbie Robinson. But you also can't have a team that's just about possession side to side, because 5v5 is back really north and south.
Nah, dude. I'm going to have a possession 5-5.
Can't do it in 5v5.
Spread the field. Mm-mm. So in the one list, it was a lot of guys who have potential, but we haven't seen anything. Jason Ramirez is on here, who is a big signing for RSL. We've not seen him play yet. The two I came down to was Aiden Morris, who I thought has been really good for the Crew at an academy level. I thought he was better than Berhalter in a lot of spaces, but Berhalter's getting the starts now in MLS. And Danny Leyva. Let me say this, because everyone's going to dunk on it, and I don't care.
Yep.
5 years ago, I went to the GA Cup. I saw a kid named Weston McKinney be by far the best player on the field and was like, this kid's legit. Didn't really know what that meant, though. What does that level translate to? The next year, I came back and Paxton Pomykal was far and away the best player on the field. And I was like, well, I think Weston McKinney's done well now in Europe. I think Paxton has that potential. The following year, I came back and Gio Reyna was the best player at the tournament, hands down, against international competition and against MLS competition. And these guys did it all year round as well at the academy level. Danny Leyva was as good compared to everyone else, as Gio Reyna and Paxton Pomykal were the 2 years before him. And so I got to trust what I've seen. And if those guys stood out at that level and were able to go and perform, I think Danny Leyva will as well. He can play both ways. He does work defensively, but he's clean on the ball. Boom. There are your five sides. Charlie Davies with Mark McKenzie, Anthony Fontana, Efra Alvarez, Robbie Robinson, and Omir Fernandez.
Yes.
Versus David Goss's side with Paxton Pomykal, Ricardo Pepi, Efra Alvarez, George Campbell, and Danny Leyva.
Let's go.
I think I win. I'm just throwing that out there.
Can we get a vote, Anders? Can we make that a vote?
Make this a vote.
Yeah. Anders put his team in. It's basically Gianluca Busio and all Sounders players. Hopiao getting in his group. Respect. So there you go. That's our 22 under 22 five-a-side team. Mm-hmm. We'll have the full vote coming out. The full list of players available will come out as well. So anyone under the age who has played or is on an MLS roster.
So who's defending on your team?
George Campbell is a center back.
I mean, organizing and defending and just George Campbell.
What do you mean? I've got Paxton Pomykal,
yeah,
who's a midfield general, and I've got Danny Leyva, who's a central midfield general. Who's organizing your team? Well, Mark McKenzie.
Yeah. All right.
It's not fair because you picked like the oldest guy on the list. So yeah, obviously.
Obviously. Okay.
All right. Let's see. Let's let the fans vote.
Yep.
If the votes come in, vote. Don't forget to vote. Make sure to register and don't forget to vote. If the fans come in and they pick me, we'll know they were right. If they come in and pick you, we know that you did something and that the voting was not clean. I'm just saying.
Okay.
That's all I say for now. Let's jump into this weekend real quick. We've got our MLS Predict 6 presented by BetMGM. So go on and make sure that you get your picks locked in. A weekend full of action coming. The six games are Orlando versus New York, Toronto versus Philly, Miami versus NYCFC, Dallas versus Columbus, Seattle, Vancouver, and San Jose versus LA. We wanted to focus on Saturday, 7 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN Plus and TSN. Toronto FC facing off against the Philadelphia Union. Charlie, who's going to win this game and why?
Well, that's the question. Toronto, for me, coming out to surprise everybody, beating Columbus Crew, and how Columbus Crew have kind of been the standard this year, been the best team. They've been leading the pack. And so for TFC to come with a healthy Josie, Ayo Akinola, the problems for TFC have always been the center backs, with Mavinga and Omar Gonzalez have been too inconsistent. They've given the ball away cheaply. They've made bad mistakes. So if those two can get back into a rhythm and be in form, then TFC probably take over the top spot in the East, because they are just really dynamic. Richie Larea has really opened up the field for them. And arguably for MVP, I don't know, you go back and forth. We can probably have this discussion all the time, because there are a number of quality players in this league, and it goes into like who's in form, who's not in form. For me, I still think Jonathan Mensah has the lead, but Pozuelo is Pozuelo.
So what you're saying is last week you picked Mensah, then on the weekend Pozuelo.
I'm still with Mensah, but Pozuelo is.
Did some things.
He did some things. And
yeah,
he's a wonderful player to watch. And what he does, he's able to glide all around the field. He reminds me of a Raquel May. He's in that fashion. So what a truly Dio. Special player. And so for Philadelphia Union going into this match, you have, Mark McKenzie and all the plaudits he's deserved as of late. Jermaine Curtin says he's the best center back in the league. All right, back it up. And he has European aspirations. Brandon Aaronson with all that talk. Fontana coming in, scoring some late goals. What does that look like? And then Sergio Santos, Shabilko, that hasn't been consistent. They haven't had a consistent striker. Shabilko at times has looked good, then he hasn't. Sergio Santos has looked good, then he hasn't. So what does that look like? And now you're getting a real test with the Toronto side that's coming off of, this confidence with beating Columbus Crew. But now they're in this quarantine phase where you travel, you go back home, then you come back. So they haven't trained in a while. So I don't know what that's going to look like. This is going to be a really interesting game.
Yeah, they basically won't train this week. As Charlie was mentioning, they went back to Canada, which means they can't train while they're there because they're quarantined in their homes, and then they're coming back for the game. We think this is the last time they're doing this, but this was a week off with no midweek, so they took the opportunity. Could make it weird. I'm going to say Philly in this game. I think Martinez under the radar has been one of, if not the best defensive midfielder in the league. And that's where, okay, if he sits in that hole and Pozuelo has to float wide and Piatti isn't coming in field, then do they have the danger on in width for Toronto to create the opportunities consistently that they need to create? Because as you said, they have weaknesses at center back, and all season that's been their issue. Mm-hmm. Is they play well, then they go to Vancouver and they give up a silly goal, and then they have to play from behind, and it changes the things they want to do. So I think Philadelphia in this one is my pick. Charlie, your official pick was Toronto?
My official pick is Toronto.
Okay. And Charlie's saying Toronto FC, go to BetMGM, your MLS Predict 6, to lock it in. If you're Charlie, you're probably going to go back and keep changing it back and forth until the moment you have to lock it in. He doesn't seem that sure. I think the next thing we do, though, Charlie will be more sure on, because Charlie got pumped up and he did his homework and he's ready to go. Producer and Anders had two fun categories for us to get into with a little bit of time. The first one is Dream Team. Once again, we got to do another draft. You're starting an MLS team today. You have to pick one defender, one midfielder, and one attacker to build your team around. Mm-hmm. Charlie, I hear that you've got multiple answers for me.
I do. So if we're going right now, healthy players in Major League Soccer, I'm going Mark McKenzie, 21 years old, arguably the best center back in the league right now, and hasn't really scratched his ceiling yet. Got it as a center back in this league, which is, I think it's been difficult to find ones that you can really, rest your confidence and laurels on and know that the club will be in good hands. Mark McKenzie is the guy. Okay. Richie Larea is also an interesting one. He's, you know, an outside back who's going to have a lot of influence going forward when you talk about players who can create room for others and generate opportunities to score goals. So that's the one guy I was like, oh, do I go? But spine.
But you got to go center back.
Yeah, you got to go spine. So Mark McKenzie. Midfield, Pozuelo. He just turned 29. So you're looking at starting a team today. You need a player that's going to last at least 3 to 5 years if that's what you're going to go with. Mm-hmm. Pozuelo is a player who could probably play till he's 40 with the way he plays. So that's the guy I would go with. Although Atuesta is probably the other guy that I'm thinking, really good brain, reads the game well, great passing, good distribution, can break up plays. I'd love to go back in time and pluck Diego Chara up when he was, a 21-year-old. That would probably be the type of player I'd love to in my midfield. So Pozuelo would be my midfielder. And as an attacker, I don't know if this is a prize or not. I'm not going with a typical striker. I'm going with Christian Pavone. The player is electric, great touches. Is sometimes relied on to be a one-man show. So I think in the right environment, because he can do a number of things, he can go right, he can go left, he can beat those players 1v1 on the dribble, create set pieces. That's my guy. Now, if I were going just American down the line.
Okay. Do it. No imports here.
No imports. So we forgot goalie, Matt Turner, for both.
Okay.
But
young goalie, guy you'll have around for a while. Fair.
And great guy, great locker room guy, someone who's going to be impacting the community. So you want those players as well. I'm going to go Matt Turner, Mark McKenzie, Eric Williamson. And forward, no surprise, Mason Toy.
Wow.
Yeah.
You're going to build an MLS team around Mason Toy and Eric Williamson. That's confidence right there.
I was also not thinking, but probably Jordan Morris I'd play. That's who I'm going to build my team around.
So no Mason Toy, Jordan Morris instead.
That was more of a little surprise. Okay. I knew you guys were going, Mason Toy. It's Jordan Morris.
I respect those groups. It's interesting, and I get the idea of how young he is, that McKenzie's gotten to that level where lockdown, he's a no-brainer for you. Mm-hmm. I agreed on center back. I had Eddie Segura in that conversation as well. I think he's one of the two or three best center backs in MLS, along with Mensah. Right now, I went Atuesta in central midfield, and I went Pozuelo as my attacker. because okay. I think I'm allowed to do that. My other one would already be Zeller Ion, by the way. When you saw even the first half against Toronto, the scoop pass to Zardes for the chance that was saved, there was no space. There, nothing had been created, and Zeller Ion still was able to make something happen out of nowhere. So it was an incredible one. Let us know what you think. Extra time at MLSsoccer.com. I'd love
what
to
if you went American? What if you went American?
If I went all American, it's not easy. I would take Mark McKenzie as my center back for sure. I would agree on Matt Turner in goal. My attacker would be Jordan Morris as well. And in midfield for Americans, I think Hassani Dotson would push it because he's so flexible.
Yeah.
And he can do so many things. That's at my a high list, level. Though.
I mean, that's my second guy. So I was like, I'm going to go Eric Williamson. But yeah.
Hassani Jackson Dotson's. Yule would be in there. Mm-hmm. And if healthy, Paxton Pomykal, clearly I'm a Pomykal guy, but he's not healthy. So
yeah.
It takes it away, that option. We had another one here. Any dream trades that you'd like to see in MLS? I've brought nothing to the table.
Yeah.
Apparently, Charlie has brought things to the table.
Ola Kamara to Red Bull.
Oh, an Atlantic Cup trade? Is that even legal? Happened a million times. Not, what right? am I asking?
Yeah, why not?
D-Ro, Dax, mm-hmm. Bobby Nespendola. Fair.
So the reason why that would work, we saw how well he performed in Columbus with with high press, more balls that are concentrated in transition. He needs opportunities. He's not getting that at DC United. You might as well go to DC United just to sit back and defend. And if you're an attacker, pack your bags. Just throw them in. So for Ola Kamara to go to Red Bull New York, that would be one of those, I think, trades that like garners a lot of attention because I think it really gives them an added boost up front. And he's finally going to be, get opportunities to score goals and have service.
Yeah. What does it do for DC?
Well, DC,
it's just the guy that doesn't work.
They get money, allocation right. money, and probably clears them to go out and get someone else. So
right, okay.
I think that's probably the lowest issue that they need to address. So, I'm also passionate about DC. That like I love the city. I love the supporters. It's almost like family for me, and so. Watching DC from afar, and I've talked to a number of former DC United players, it's really disheartening. It's really sad to see what's going on there right now and the level of quality on the field. So yeah, it's not good. A lot of changes need to be made.
So speaking of New York Red Bulls, Charlie, perfect transition for me as we close up here in the mailbag. Rookie from Brooklyn sent this email last week, said Thursday's episode, in response to reports about Gerhard Struber becoming the next head coach of Red Bull New York, Charlie Davies says, quote, that's very underwhelming if I'm a New York Red Bulls fan. And how is this putting you in the conversation a team that has ambition? Ricky says, so first of all, I am a New York Red Bull fan and I am not underwhelmed to find out that my favorite team is chasing an up-and-coming manager who, according to the report in The Athletic, is highly sought after and theoretically could be coaching the EPL next season. According to reports today, RB are putting up 2 million euros to activate his buyout clause. What other MLS team has made an investment like this in getting a coach? I think that puts you in the conversation. Charlie should have just said, I've never heard of this guy. I'll reserve my judgment for later. Would like to add, the end of the email says, shout out to Goss for nailing it, but that part's not important. Charlie, would you like to respond?
Well, I understand if you're a Red Bull New York Red Bulls fan and you just kind of are like, give us a chance and give him a chance. And for me, but still, what success has he, had? But if I'm a fan of the club, I want a coach. If you're bringing in a coach that has won something, that has a proven track record, or if you're in a Manchester City's, backroom staff behind Pep Guardiola, like a Arteta who hasn't been proven, but you've been in that situation for a while. You are a player. Now you're a coach and you've been studying and you're in a club that has had a ton of success and you're just waiting for your chance and you're learning everything. That's not this case. So for me, yeah, it is underwhelming. He hasn't achieved anything as a coach. He hasn't won any trophies. Yeah. I would want a coach who's won trophies, or the flip side, a younger coach who has you know, got all his badges, but has been in a successful situation. If I'm learning from Jurgen Klopp, if I'm learning from Pep Guardiola, if I'm learning from Pochettino, being in that type of environment every single day, and then he's getting his first kind of shot, that's what I'd want. So that's why I was underwhelmed by the name.
Yeah. Now, in theory, that's kind of what this is. He was a Red Bull Salzburg guy, not at the first team level, though. So he was under Rolf. Apparently, Red Bull Global thinks very highly of him. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Marco Reus has come from that school, Jesse Marsh as well. So there is background to success from the pathway he has taken.
Kids, though, not yeah. first
team. Agreed.
Yeah.
But you also never know.
It's a big difference, though.
It took Maurizio Sarri a number of years.
I'm just saying it's a big difference from youth to full first team. And that's what it is.
All right. Well, on that note, we thank you all for your emails. Vikas, great email about Moises Nijman. So shout out Moises Nijman. He was on our list, but didn't get in the 22 under 22. Five asides, but I would love to play with him in my group because he would be really good. And everyone else who emailed us at extratime@mlsoccer.com. You can also tweet at us. We got a number of great tweets about some U.S. youth national team stuff that we will talk about coming forward. This was an awesome show. Thank you, Charlie, for working with
me. As always.
The kit's still in the glass, but maybe now that the Twins are home, we break it out. We get on that backfield. I see your IGs. You're curling goals in against five-year-olds. You look in form. You could start my national team as well. To Anders and Chris, thank you, our producers. And to everyone out there, don't forget to go vote. Register and vote, both in the United States and for the best 22 under 22 five-a-side in extra time. And on that note, thank you and have a great day. We'll be right back.